So this morning's scripture reading is from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, beginning with verse 46. It is found on page 47 of the New Testament, and I'm going to render it just a little bit differently. Dig this crazy scene. As Jesus and his 12 dudes were splitting from Jericho, headed towards Jerusalem, this crazy cat, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, he was a beggar, man. He was just sitting by the side of the road. And when he heard that it was Jesus going by, he began to shout out. He began to create a scene. Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. This whole crowd that was gathered around said, "Hey, cool it, Bart. Cool it." But Bartimaeus just hollered even more loudly, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus just froze, like right where he was, and said, "Call him here." And then the whole crowd like got this whole different thing. "Hey, Bartimaeus, come on, man, he's calling you. Take heart." And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said, "Teacher, let me see again." And Jesus said to him, "Go. Your faith has made you well." And immediately, he could like see. And he hit the road with Jesus and the dudes. So just so you know, my second choice, that's a song called Desire by the Irish band U2. But my second choice for a song this morning was Tame Impala, Time Impala, Desire Be, Desire Go. If you've never heard of it, that's okay. Some of you may know it. I just want you to know I do listen to music made in this century. Even if my Halloween costume is from the middle of the last one. So this is kind of supposed to be a beatnik outfit. The entire beatnik phenomenon of the 1950s was in many ways a creation of the media. It highlighted kind of shallow aspects of what was a deeper literary movement, writers seeking spiritual connection and meaning, seeking something else in a culture that they thought itself was fairly shallow. One of the central figures of the Beat generation, one of the central writers, was a writer named Jack Kerouac. And Kerouac, in 1957, published a novel called On the Road. And 20-some years later, when I was a college student, I discovered that book. Here's just a couple sentences from the early part of On the Road. "The only people for me are the mad ones, the ones who are mad to live, mad to talk, mad to be saved, desirous of everything at the same time, the ones who never yawn or say a commonplace thing, but burn, burn, burn like fabulous yellow Roman candles exploding like spiders across the stars. And in the middle, you see the blue center light pop, and everybody goes, ah." In that kind of wild sentence, Kerouac is describing something of the human condition. We're people filled with desires. The story of Aladdin and the lamp, story familiar to many of us from movies and fairy tales. Story about Aladdin is a story about Aladdin being sent into a cave by his uncle Mustafa, and there he discovers an old lamp, but it's a magic lamp. And the genie of the lamp has the power to grant three wishes. Aladdin, first of all, wishes to be sent home, and he is. Then he wishes for riches and happiness, and he gets them. And Aladdin marries well, and then there's trouble along the way, but the ending is a happy one. That whole genie in the lamp idea does get spoofed often. There's an ad, insurance company ad now, where a guy, part of the ad says, "Do you know genies are really literal?" And they show a scene of a guy rubbing a lamp, and the genie says, "What can I give you?" And the guy says, $1 million. And suddenly there's all these antlered animals around. Desire gone wrong. But who of us would turn away from $1 million or a magic lamp? Among our human qualities is that we desire. And our desires are multiple. And our desires are multiple, and trying to follow them all pulls us in different directions. We wish for $1 million and get antlered animals. And then we have to wish them away when the stories don't go well. And then you're left with one wish, and some silly thing happens, and you sputter out a wish. And your whole time opportunity for doing a grand thing with all the wishes is just gone. But that story, that folktale, and all of its kind of funny spoofs gives us a little bit of a glimpse into who we are as human beings. We have these desires, multiple desires. So what do we do with all of them? Because they do pull us in different directions. We have a desire for love, for intimacy, for security, for meaningful work, for companionship. We desire a good meal, desire a bit of notoriety. We desire quiet time and yet also desire not to be too alone. We desire something nice to wear. What do we do with all of that? Well, to be honest, much of the Christian tradition has just said you sort of forget it. Desire's not been a good thing in much of the Christian tradition. We read in the invitation to worship something by St. Maximus the Confessor, an early early century Christian. Pleasure and distress, desire and fear, and what follows from them were not originally created as elements of human nature. These things were introduced as a result of our fall from perfection. Basically, he's saying all that human desire stuff, it wasn't there at the beginning. It's a result of huge mistake on the part of human beings. And if it's all a mistake, what do you do with it? You try not to give in to desire, try to forget them. Now, another person in that same sort of collection of early Christian writings, one cannot drive away impassioned thoughts unless he watches over his desire. And yet, listen to the question that Jesus asks Bartimaeus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus and his disciples are making their way to Jerusalem. They're leaving Jericho. There's a large crowd. Bartimaeus, a blind man, a beggar by the side of the road, cries out. People tell him to hush. Jesus notices him, invites him here. The crowd suddenly sort of changes their tune. It's kind of a funny part of the story. Oh, take heart, he's calling you. And then there comes that question, what do you want me to do for you? Seems, in some ways, like kind of a silly question, doesn't it? I mean, if you're without sight, wouldn't that be the obvious thing that you'd want somebody to do for you? Why even ask? And indeed, it is what Bartimaeus asks, but that pause and that question and his response gives us the sense that there's something just a little bit deeper going on here. Yes, Bartimaeus wants his sight, but even more, he wants insight. He wants somehow to see, not just with his eyes, but to see more deeply. And Jesus simply tells him, go. Your faith has made you well. Bartimaeus gains sight, but he also gains insight because immediately he follows Jesus on the way. What do you want? What do you want? I think if we ask ourselves that question, deeply and profoundly enough, it can help us make sense of that whole range of things we might want, that whole range of desires. So I just want to hit the pause button here for a quick moment. I want us to acknowledge that we are fairly fortunate in being able to be in this place asking those kinds of questions. Mari Rudy is a professor at the University of Toronto who's written a lot on love and meaningful life, and her books are wonderfully thought-provoking. But in one of her books, she acknowledges that even to be able to ask those kinds of questions is, in a way, a kind of privilege. Because there's some people, she says, who suffer from structural inequalities that make it difficult for many to think beyond daily survival. We can ask these kinds of questions because we're not worried about where our next meal is coming from, or at least most of us. Maybe we have at times. We've got a place to go. We can come to a concert this afternoon. It's just good to acknowledge that. It's good to acknowledge that people who are starving or realistically afraid that they might find themselves on the verge of homelessness or on the verge of violence against their person. And what some folks want and need most desperately is just a modicum of security, something to eat, a warm place to sleep. Asking that question of what we want assumes that we have some measure of that. And part of my passion in wanting to see the world be a place where more people have enough is because I think it's important for people to be able to ask those kinds of questions. When people are just scraping by, just making ends meet or not making ends meet, there's so much of their potential that we don't get to see. This morning I was tremendously moved by the story of the young woman at the Faith Forum who was on the verge of homelessness. She's now 20 and is a senior in college. And without gaining some support and stability from other people, her gifts might have gone untapped for quite a long time. But I want us to ask those deeper questions this morning. So interestingly, having said all that, Bartimaeus is a beggar, doesn't ask for food. That might have been a good question, something that he would have wanted. If we ask ourselves deeply and profoundly enough, what do you want? I think we find something like this. I think we find a desire to be whole, to live our lives fully, to develop the capacities we have, a desire to connect with God and with other people, a desire to contribute, And maybe if I was to try to wrap all of those up into one thing, I would simply say we have this desire to be whole and live fully. And all of those other things are a part of that. And the testimonies that there is that profound desire in human beings are multiple, and they run deep. St. Augustine, in his famous words from his work, The Confessions, writes, "For you, O God, have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." That deep desire to connect with God and live fully. The 19th century Danish theologian Søren Kierkegaard wrote a book called Purity of Heart is to Will One Thing. And what was that one thing? Genuinely to will the good as an individual. Connection. To be whole. To be oneself. Death camp survivor and therapist Viktor Frankl movingly writes about this in his book Man's Search for Meaning. Man's search for meaning is a primary force in his life, Frankl says. Ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of his life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. He can only respond by being responsible. That sense that life invites us to be fully who we are, to live fully. And finally, just one last testimony. Joseph Campbell, interviewed by Bill Moyers, once said, "People say that what we're all seeking is meaning in life. I don't think that's what we're really seeking. I think that what we're seeking is an experience of being alive, so that our life experience on the purely physical plane will have resonances within our innermost being and reality, so that we actually feel the rapture of being alive. Now, all of them say things a little bit differently, but I think they all testify to this really central, core, deep desire we have to live fully as human beings, for life, for living well, for developing our capacities, for relating to God, for joy, to live fully and to be made whole. And I think when we take the time to touch that very profound, deep desire, it helps us make sense and order all of those other desires in our lives. And I think that is an important challenge for us in our day and time. For we are bombarded day in and day out with all kinds of invitations to follow this desire or that desire, usually by buying this product or that product, which will make you smarter, taller, more beautiful, more successful, or at least you'll look the part better. All of those things that seek to pull us apart in all of these different directions. We need to take time to quiet ourselves and hear that deep, deep yearning to be whole and to live fully, to know God, to grow, to connect. One of the sad things about the beat writer Jack Kerouac is there were times in his writings when he could touch that deep desire so well, and yet he was never able to stay with it in his own life. The whole multitude desires got the better of him. He wanted to be a well-known writer, but fame was not something he handled well. He died before he was 50, a raging alcoholic. His writings testify to something different, but he wasn't able to live it. An 85-year-old woman was being interviewed on her birthday. "What advice would you give to people who want to be as vibrant as you are when they are 85? The reporter asked her. She said, "Well, at our age, it is important to keep using all our potential or it dries up. It's important to be with people and, if at all possible, to be of some service to others. That's what keeps us alive and well." The reporter was curious. "Well, what do you do in the way of service?" he asked this 85-year-old woman. She looked at him and she said, "You know, I take care of an old woman in my neighborhood." That kind of sense of that deep desire to be who we are, to live fully, to live well, to be connected. When we're in touch with that, the rest of our desires fall into place, a little bit like starting with A in the ABC song. Following Jesus, I think, is to keep asking, "What do you want?" To sharpen that question, to be in touch with that deep desire, and then to trust that in God's love, in Jesus, that desire for wholeness is answered, is met. And we too follow Jesus on the way. Amen.